Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell, Editor-in-Chief of Boat International, and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Sophia Wilson, our Acting Deputy Editor. We're back in the same room, Sophia, this is very exciting.
We are indeed. I've finally been let out of the events cupboard, which is a big upgrade for me. And from here, I can fully appreciate your glowing tan. Where is it you've been this week? Was it Greece, I believe?
Yep, that's right. I was very lucky. I escaped with the Y to a beautiful yacht called Emotion 2. The owners were very kind to invite my wife and I on for a couple of days out in Greece, which was absolutely lovely. There was no other boats around. It was amazing, really. So we felt like we had the entire Aegean to ourselves. We started off in Mykonos and then wound up in Athens. But it was lovely. You know, the water was still very warm. And it's just a brilliant few days, just kind of, you know, eking out, you know, the last of the med season. But it was brilliant. I don't know why more boats don't, you know, spend kind of late October in Greece, because the weather was still, you know, it was a bit chilly in the evenings, but the weather during the day was lovely. The water was great. Yeah. Brilliant few days.
Yeah, I was chatting to a Turkish owner the other day. He's planning to still be on board, kind of into November. Says it's his favourite time of the year to be on board.
Well, there's no one around. You've got the place to yourself. And the restaurants are still open, just. And, when we were in Mykonos, we landed in Mykonos. It was really buzzy, actually. There was loads of people still there. The bars were still full. But, you know, we were the only boat.
Anyway, in between your trips, you did manage to squeeze in this week's interview, which sounds very highbrow. What can you tell us about it?
So, yeah, this week's really interesting one. So I came across a couple of academics. I spoke at an event with these two earlier on in the year, and I was fascinated by what they were saying. So it's Dr. Phil Klaus and Dr. Annalisa Tarquini. They're both professors at the University of Monaco, and they have done the first ever academic study into the superyacht owner experience. And that struck me as fascinating because, anecdotally, of course, you know, everyone in this business collects data, and anecdotally, we all engage with superyacht owners, but no one has ever done it, you know, a proper study, an academic study into the buying and spending habits of superyacht owners. So they interviewed something like 100 owners to discover their motivations for buying and selling superyachts and what they love about the experience of owning a yacht. They also look at the charter market and examine why some of those charterers don't end up buying yachts. And one of their conclusions, I don't want to spoil the whole interview, one of their conclusions was, despite the massive uptick in brokerage sales we've seen this year, they think the long-term trend is for less ownership and more part-time interaction with yachts. So basically, a bigger future for the charter market and a decline in ownership generally over the very long term. They also dig into some of the negative emotions attached to superyacht ownership and the not always positive relationship with service providers and how that reflects negatively on the whole superyacht industry. But for anyone interested in superyachting, I think it's a fascinating piece of research. And actually, if you'd like to hear more from the good doctors, they'll be speaking at our Explorer Yacht Summit on the 11th of November in Monaco. Buy your tickets now.
And again, not wishing to spoil the interview, but did they talk about the idea of fractional ownership at all? Because there's obviously been a couple of people that have kind of tried to do that over the years, but it doesn't seem to have taken off in the way that people hope that it might.
They do tackle fractional ownership. That was one of the things we discussed because, you know, for the longest time, people have been talking about the sharing economy and whether it will impact super yachting. If I recall from the interview, they didn't think that was an answer to super yacht ownership. I can't quite remember why. I'll have to re-listen to it all again. But it is a part of the interview. But yeah, like you said, I mean, I was having this conversation the other day. So every kind of 18 months or 24 months or something, there seems to be a new company pitching fractional ownership. I came from the world of much smaller boats, and it was the same there, exactly the same. And I cannot remember. There's a few rare exceptions. I know CNET are doing some good stuff on that front, but there's not too many companies out there that you can pinpoint and say they've done a really, really brilliant job of fractional ownership. Obviously, there's lots of owners that share boats. We all know them, you know, with a friend or a couple of friends. Seven Sins is an example, the San Lorenzo, and there's others we know of where just, you know, a couple of, you know, friends get together and buy a super yacht and they informally kind of split the time up. But yeah, I can't think of too many really shining examples of companies that have made a massive go of that sector of the market.
Well, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what they say about it in the interview.
I will re-listen with all of you. But it is good. Look, they're brilliant. They're very, very smart, capable people. So do stick around and listen to that. It's a really good insight into the motivations of people buying super yachts.
Anyway, while you were away on your holiday, someone had to keep the office ticking over. So I hosted this year's Young Designer of the Year live Q&A, which was held in association with Ocean Co. For those of you who aren't aware, we host a Young Designer of the Year competition where we create an imaginary brief for designers under the age of 28 who've not been employed by a yacht design studio. The winner is always announced as part of the Boat International Design and Innovation Awards at the Superyacht Design Festival. And as well as winning a 3,000 euro prize, they also get a special experience with Ocean Co. But possibly the kind of biggest benefit of this is that they get to put their designs in front of our esteemed panel of judges who are all designers from the superyacht industry. The idea of Monday night's webinar was to give some of the young designers a chance to quiz some of the judging panel, both about this year's tasks, and they had some very specific questions on that, but also more generally about the best way to break into the industry. So I was joined by designers Francesco Muzio, Tracy Canavaggio, Gilles Vernet, as well as the chairman of the panel, Roger Leonverco. It was a really interesting chat and it is recorded and now available on the BI website. So any young designers that missed it, go and find it and have another listen through. What really struck me about it though, is just how hard it is to break into the industry. I mean, Gilles revealed, for example, that Ocean Co only has 4 in-house designers. And obviously once they're working for a brand like Ocean Co, they're not keen to leave anytime soon. Stu, I was wondering, over your kind of years in industry, are there any designers that you've really seen break through from that kind of young designer stage to actually being considered one of the big names in the industry?
I wouldn't say major player, but there's the way, because there was kind of like, I mean, the superyacht design industry is not all that old, if you remember. It's really a kind of almost a third generation kind of discipline. So obviously there was Bannenberg, and then, you know, his immediate network, you know, the Disdales, the Winches, the Haywoods, etc. And they kind of formed the second tier, and, you know, Martin Francis in there as well. And so beneath the next generation came people like Dan Leonard, Johnny Horsfield, and guys like that. And then the next generation again is these young designers now coming through. And I guess what's happened is that, you know, there's more and more boats being built, the fleet's getting bigger, the order book's growing, but there's just that many more superyacht designers out there now. I suppose boats are getting bigger, so studios need more designers working on single projects, which is good, but I would certainly say it is a tricky business to get into for young designers now. Because you need a bit of a CV, don't you, before someone's going to commission a boat with you. But you know, there are some examples of people that have done really well. I'd single out Adam Voorhees, who just picked up a World Superyacht Award a few months ago for the interior refit of Broadwater, and that was actually the second World Superyacht he's picked up for a refit. So you know, there are people that are breaking through, but it is a bit of a grind. Just because for the longest time, it was a bit of a closed shop. But it, you know, there's a democratizing process going on at the moment, which is great. And they're so talented, these people. I mean, when I see the finalist designs and it blows me away how good they are. And you know what? A lot of these guys will go on to have enormously successful careers, but it's just gonna take a few years, and you know, superyacht projects don't land in people's laps.
Yeah, I mean, Francesca also actually mentioned during the talk how important it is from her perspective to also have young creativity coming into the business, and that actually she can almost learn as much sometimes from the younger people coming into the business as they can be learning from her, which was a nice kind of refreshing way that you know, she is looking at that idea of bringing young blood through into the superyacht design industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And that kind of second and third generation, it's kind of incumbent on them really to identify this talent and pull it through. I mean, but you know, I was actually, again, I think I mentioned this podcast not too long ago. Some of the studios are recruiting quite hard. I mean, Design Unlimited is a UK-based studio. Again, I was chatting to those guys on the way to Monaco, and they've just, you know, they're a small studio-ish, but I suppose medium-sized now, because we've got 10 to 15 people kind of in the studio, and they've recruited a few guys during this pandemic period. So these studios are really busy, and there's lots of work out there. But I suppose they're, what's happening is these young designers are joining bigger studios and just a kind of a cog in a bigger machine. And then after a few years, what tends to happen is they might get a client, they might branch out on their own and create a kind of a own brand studio. It's generally what happens. But yeah, I mean, there's so much design talent. It's great to see. And also, you know, non-traditional yachting design talent is coming into the business as well. And there's more and more of that happening all the time as, you know, owners look outside the industry for people to design their boats. And it's interesting watching that kind of cross-pollination effort. And actually, we'll be addressing a lot of that at the Superyacht Design Festival, which is coming up in December.
An excellent segue, so well done.
Thank you very much. Well, here's a slightly clunkier segue for you from the Superyacht Design Festival in Milan to the Fort Lauderdale International Boat Show, which is on right now in the States. Our US team is there, which constitutes the Boat US edition and the Dock Walk team. So do swing by the Boat International stand on the face dock and grab a copy of Boat International and Dock Walk. I'm gutted to not be there, frankly, but travel restrictions just made it too difficult. But we have a brilliant team over in the States, so do go and say hello. On the plus side, I suppose, of not being in the States is I finally get to do a Halloween in the UK. I haven't done Halloween in the UK for years and years and years because I'm always in Fort Lauderdale.
What's the outfit of choice?
I'm going as a middle-aged man. So it's a real stretch for me. So I'll be marching the kids around the neighbourhood and bothering people for candy. But it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be great. But so we probably should talk about some of the very exciting boats that are at Fort Lauderdale. Why don't we go one each? What's top of the list?
I think top of the list has to be Boardwalk, the brand new 76.5 meter Fedship, which was the cover of our November US issue, and yep, it's running in our December Boat International issue.
I think it's in the January issue, actually. I think it's in the January issue. It's one of the things we should know, really, isn't it, really? But it is a big exclusive on the cover of the US edition, which is the issue at Fort Lauderdale now. Yeah, big impressive Fedship.
Yeah, and Cecile wrote that piece, and I know she was really impressed when she spent time on board. So yeah, it'll be exciting to see her at the show as well.
Absolutely. Next, we've got a pair of Benettis. Rebecca, the 40 meter Oasis model, is there. That was obviously at Cannes as well, so it slipped over the Atlantic to Fort Lauderdale, and also the Moto Panfilo, the 37 meter new model from Benetti, that's also there, which was also at Cannes, so the first opportunity for the US market to really see those two Benettis.
Next up, we have another 37 meter boat, 37L from Ocean Alexander, which is one of a quartet of debuts from Ocean Alexander on display at the show.
Big show for Ocean Alexander. Yep, the 37L. Next we have Freighter Yachts 1000, the 30 meter boat. Again, I think that was at Cannes. So that should be a big seller for the US market. I see that doing very well out there. And last but not least, this is just, by the way, a very, very limited list of the many fabulous boats at the Fort Lauderdale Boat Show. But last but not least,
is the 32XB by New Marine. And we will have some more Fort Lauderdale and, well, sort of analysis at the end, because our data is going to be looking at the US fleet this week in honour of it being, of Flips being on.
There you go. And we'll stick a link to a story in the description, which obviously will take you to a fuller list of some of the very, very exciting new models at Fort Lauderdale. But I hope you enjoy the show and the sun, and do go see the team over at the boat stand and have a coffee and grab a copy of the magazine. Right, let's get into the news. Sophia, kick us off.
So I think we have to start off with Perini Navi's bidding war, which is now going on, which is nice to have something a bit more positive to say than what we've been able to say the last few times on the podcast. So after two failed auctions, it would seem that the race is back on for the assets of Perini Navi. The Italian C Group moved first, offering $47 million to acquire the bankrupt Perini Navi business and estate. As a reminder, the reserve price in the first auction was $62.5 million, and in the second, it was $53.5 million. In an announcement on Tuesday, the Italian C Group said it presented an irrevocable proposal for the acquisition of the entire corporate complex of Perini Navi SPA to the judge delegate of Lucca's Court of Law. The Ferretti Group and San Lorenzo have also thrown their hat into the ring, but haven't declared their bid price. A statement read, Ferretti Group and San Lorenzo announced that they have presented to the official receiver of the Tribunal of Lucca an irrevocable proposal for the acquisition of the entire corporate complex of Perini Navi SPA, declared bankrupt on January 2021. The offer is said to have been presented with a business plan outlining how the two companies would restart Perini Navi and its production facilities, including how it would grow the company and offer continue to offer the workers across Perini Navi's two shipyards employment. The judge will now have to decide whether to accept the offer or set up a third auction. Keep up to date with the whole saga on boat business. Nick, our business editor, is working furiously to keep the story updated every time that the new updates come in.
He's done a brilliant job. There's a timeline actually in the boat business story about this that's really worthwhile, with, you know, very handy links to all the developments thus far. But yeah, he's on it like a greyhound. Have a look. It's been an interesting saga to get where we are, but you know, this does look like we could see a result finally, and which is great for the Perini Navi brand, its family of owners, and you know, obviously the shipyard that eventually ends up with its assets and estate. Next we have the news that 86 meter Ocean Coast Superyacht Seven Seas has been sold on the brokerage market and is now called Man of Steel. So Q3 numbers were good for brokerage sales. Q4 numbers are looking strong too, and this will only add to those. So obviously Seven Seas, very famous for reportedly being owned, at least formally, by one Steven Spielberg. The asking price of the yacht was withheld, but it was jointly listed for sale by Edmiston and Merle Wood. She was first delivered in 2010 and was only ever used privately. The yacht is packed with premium superyacht features, including a touch-and-go helipad, a range of custom-built tenders, professional cinema, hint, hint, and a private owner's deck.
So next, we move on to Royal Houseman's 58.5-metre superyacht Project Fee is preparing for sea trials. The yacht was pictured leaving the new build yard in Vollenhove on her way to Amsterdam to begin the sea trials. It comes after the yacht hit the water for the first time in July 21. The superyacht is due to be delivered later this year alongside its 36-metre shadow vessel, Fee Phantom, which was launched by Alia Yachts in April this year. Designed by Cor de Rover, Project Fee is a fast placement aluminium superyacht and is sent to be the longest sub-500 GT yacht in the world, according to today's regulations.
Wild-looking boat, this Project Fee. Really, really exciting project. It's good to see her finally on the water. Yeah, but long, lean thing. That still slips under 500 gross tons.
Supermodel-esque.
Yeah, it really is. Lots of interesting lines on that boat. Great work from Cor. Next, some sad news actually. So the brand new 24-metre yacht, the Maori 80, called Mamaji, has sunk after being consumed by fire off the coast of Sardinia. Never good, these stories. So Mamaji was the first hull in the Maori 80 series and attended the Cannes Yachting Festival in September following delivery. Now, the fire took hold on October the 21st, with the four crew on board issuing a mayday at 7:12 p.m. The yacht was attended by the Olbia Coast Guard, which arrived to find all crew had been evacuated and they were on a life raft. The blaze was eventually brought under control, but the yacht sank just after midnight in 40 metres of water. The Olbia Coast Guard returned the following day to contain pollution and assess the recovery of the wreck. Great shame, actually, because great looking boat, and our man in the south of France, Raphael, had just done a sea trial on her.
Yeah, he was particularly devastated by the news. But no, it is obviously all the, if you start to think about the hours of work involved by everyone in that yacht, for that to happen so soon after she had been delivered and was on display at Cannes and very well regarded as far as I can tell at Cannes, it's a real shame.
Yeah, sure he was. So thoughts obviously to Mary and the owner of that boat. Last story.
Lastly, we thought we'd better give you another update on Ocean Cove's 127-metre sailing yacht Y721, which is now being pictured on Transport. We all know that she was reportedly has been commissioned by Amazon founder Jeff Bezos, and the yacht this week has been pitched on the Transporter after rolling out of the sheds in the shipyard last week. The record-breaking Black Hole project is set to be the world's largest sailing yacht when she's delivered in 2022, unseating the current title holder, which is Stuart.
Sea Cloud.
Too easy. It's also will be the largest yacht ever to be built in the Netherlands and the largest super yacht ever built by Ocean Co.
And it's a big old sailing boat, which is great. Very happy about that. Alrighty, let's dig into the data, which as ever is brought to you by Boat Pro, the super yacht industry's leading market intelligence platform. So with FLIBS underway, we thought we'd have a little look at the US built fleet. So these are yachts, super yachts, over 24 meters built in the US. And there have been 1,821 of those, so which accounts for 15.6% of the global super yacht fleet. So the average size of the US built boats is between 31 and 32 meters, which is about the same as Italy. But when you look at the average age of those yachts, the US boats on average are much older. So the average age of the US fleet is 31 years, and for the Italian fleet, it's 16 years. Looking at GT, the average in the States is 195 gross tons, and it's 213 in Italy. So this, you know, the average size is about the same, but Italy builds slightly more voluminous boats. This makes sense because younger yachts have larger volumes. Remember, the average age of the Italian fleet is half that around of the US fleet. So US production has really dropped since 2008. So 504 super yachts were built in the US between 2000 and 2009. The following decade, just 273 yachts were built. So again, about the market was basically halved. US production was halved in the decade following 2010. And since 2020, only 27 US super yachts have been delivered. So as you'd expect, the sports fish market really is massive in the US. 86% of all sport fish yachts are built in the US, and many of them are also owned by US nationals. In our most recent global order book, the US was remained at sixth place with 29 projects in build or on order. And the next global order book is being put together now. It will be released with our January issue. But it's some good news. We are seeing US production rising again, which is fantastic. After a couple of years, well, a decade or more of decline, we're seeing US production on the up, which is great. This is mainly a consequence of sports fish production led by great shipyards like Viking, but also thanks to a handful of new orders from historical shipyards. So some good news for the US market on there as FLIBS kicks off, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and it is literally changing at FLIBS. We're kind of finally getting a better idea of what the US market is doing. So Viking in particular, I know, just made an announcement about some new builds that they're working on, and that's kind of shifted how the whole perspective's looking for the US market.
But well, they just make amazing boats, Viking. Brilliant shipyard. And the from what I understand from Cecile and the Dockwalk team, FLIBS is very, very busy indeed. Which is great. Lots of activity in that market. So if you're heading down to the Fort Lauderdale Boat Show, swing by the stand, say hello, pick up a copy of the magazine, and have a great time.
And enjoy your trick-or-treating, Stuart.
That's right, I'm off trick-or-treating. I'll try not to eat too much candy. Stay tuned for my interview with Doctors Phil Klaus and Annalisa Tarquini. So we're here today with Professor Phil Klaus and Dr. Annalisa Tarquini from the University of Monaco, who have been studying the buying patterns, spending habits, and the kind of the owner journey, really, of billionaires into super yacht ownership and experience. But I don't want to spoil the whole story. So why don't you guys, first of all, why don't you introduce yourself to our audience and tell us a bit more about your particular areas of expertise?
Thank you, Stuart. Welcome to everybody. So my name is Annalisa Tarquini Poli. I'm the director of the Master of Science here at the International University of Monaco. And then I'm Italian by my strong accent. And so I have the pleasure to work with Professor Phil Klaus.
Thank you so very much for having us, Stuart. And we are delighted to talk today about the yacht owner, how shall we say, client experience super yacht owner experience, whatever it is, it's going to be exciting. My name is Professor Dr. Phil Klaus. I'm Professor of Customer Experience, Strategy and Management at the International University of Monaco. And I've been doing that for quite some while. And before I became an academic, I had a real job. So I was on the other side of the table being a manager. And all of our research is about managerial application. And courtesy of that, and all the great companies I had an opportunity to work with, I've been widely considered as one of the leading customer experience strategists worldwide. And as we know, perceptions are reality, so I won't judge anybody on that and I will just go with it.
So starting with this idea of how important can be understanding the customer journey, and then because we have the great honor and pleasure to live in the Principality of Monaco, we are very close to where the yacht owners or yacht users are. So this is why we have started this research 3 years ago. Why we don't do that, actually? Because we noticed that nobody never put the finger on this point. And so they said, let's start, because it was a big challenge, because as you can imagine, Stuart, reaching these people was very complicated. But the thing is, so I live here since 14 years now. So actually, I used to work also on boats as part of a crew long time ago. So I had this little knowledge, and then after reaching the first, the second, and then like a snowball effect, we managed to reach other yacht owners. And so this is how we reached.
And to be honest, we were not off to a good start when we worked together. You know, it's almost like dating. You know, first dates never go well. Because Annalisa is hardcore luxury. This is what luxury is all about. And I'm hardcore customer experience. And Annalisa said, oh, luxury is completely different. And I said, rubbish, I don't think it's completely different. It's the same motivation, because they are still human beings, even if they are ultra high net worth individuals. What's important for them will still be important for them. So we kind of fed off each other and said, why don't we try it out? Because I had some luxury context, but never something like the ultra high net worth individuals. Because as you know, Stuart, to get to these people is almost impossible. Whenever we talk about ultra high net worth individuals, people say, how is that possible? We remember when we handed in our first academic paper regarding that, it came back with one reviewer, I don't believe you know that many billionaires. We said it's not about belief, it's not a religion. We interviewed them, we talked to them, and we went from there.
Yeah.
But until this point, until your study, there had been no academic research about the buying habits of billionaires, basically. You are the first. This is new ground.
Yeah, we are absolutely the first, because we looked at it as researchers. You do first a review of everything that's out there about ultra high net worth individuals. And the only thing we could find was, of course, about financial planning, wealth management, and so on. But that only describes it in a very demographic way, or possible solutions they might be looking for. And research was done what people are doing it, when they are doing it, how they are doing it. But for us as researchers, we always say the most important question is missing, which is, why do people what they do? Only with the why, the how, when, and what makes complete sense. And there was nothing. And now we have two publications in 2021, and two others are coming up. And whenever we present, may it be the superyacht industry, may it be private aviation, or everybody, private offices, they always say, how do you get these people? What did you come up with? And we are like, well, talk to us, you know, because we are scientists. Unlike a management consultant, we are not holding back our knowledge and put it away. So you have to pay for it now if you want to get something. We spread it out so everybody can have it. And this is why we are so glad and so thankful for you giving us an opportunity to talk to all your great readers and listeners, to tell them this is how it actually works. If you want to know more about it, get in touch with us.
I'm sure people will. Well, let's dig into it. So why? Well, actually, first of all, before I ask you the central question, how big was your sample size? I mean, how many people did you talk to for the study?
Oh, for now, we have a panel of over 100 ultra high net worth individuals.
Wow.
We started out with the first sample that we started out was the super yacht owners, because we are in Monaco, we work with the yachting industry, so it was only a natural extension. And that was in 2018. And there we had a sample, just when we started out, of the representation of 54 super yachts. So we pretty much talked to the people who purchased the annual super yachts for 1 year. There you have it. And from there, it just expanded and extended. And we added other things such as private aviation, art collection, purchasing antique cars, wealth management.
Fine spirits.
Fine spirits.
The big collectors.
Yeah.
Art collectors.
Tailor-made services. It all comes high-end real estate, you know. If you want to have a private island, whatever floats your boat, so to say.
But you have also to understand that actually these kind of luxury clients, when they charter or purchase a yacht, of course they fly private. What we analyze, of course, one aspect, but during the conversation, they can also mention something else. So we're always enriching our research from different perspectives. So it is not just a very dry research about what you do with yachts. Absolutely.
Because
not.
At the end of the day, what we are really after is we want to find out what matters most to these people. Why do they do the things they do? Why do they choose you over you? Why do they buy a super yacht or do not buy a super yacht, even if they have the financial means to? So there's a lot of things going on there. Yeah.
Okay. So what, from your research and from your findings, why do people buy super yachts?
You know,
straight to the point.
You know the famous saying, and everybody recalls that it's, there are only two happy days in the life of a super yacht owner, when you buy them and when you sell it. This is pretty much the story, but why do they buy it? One reason only. They go through what I describe, the gates of hell of Dante's Inferno. This is how people describe the interactions with the super yacht industry and with everybody involved in it, the whole system that goes around it, all the services that are connected with it. But they do it for one reason, because of the experience they have on the yacht. They say, the memories I have seeing my children the first time out there in the ocean, doing their first jet skiing, or just being in the middle of nowhere, anchoring and seeing a night that we've never seen before, they say, this is priceless. In this moment, all the headaches are forgotten. But unfortunately, we also know, you know, on average, people use their super yacht 6 weeks a year, you know, but the headache doesn't stop after 6 weeks.
Yeah. No, it certainly doesn't. I mean, yeah, for 6 weeks of use, there's that's a year's worth of expenses and quite a lot of passengers.
It's quite an expensive vacation, as we call it, because at the end of the day, when we look at the mind settings, why people buy a super yacht, they don't buy it for social status. That's something that they always, either they do not mention it, or they do not highlight it. Or as Annalisa often says, they say, oh, other people are doing it. I don't do that. The interesting part is, when you're an ultra high net worth individual, and this is why we love to be scientists, because we come with a blank canvas, so we have no bias whatsoever. We clearly figure out that the people who have everything are not looking anymore to have social status or whatsoever. When they talk about their private jet, they talk about transportation, like you and I would take the bus or a rental car. They take their jet. That's nothing else. It brings me from A to B. And when they talk about their yacht, it's about vacation. It's about spending time with their beloved ones. So it's nothing else than a tool to facilitate an experience, nothing else and nothing more, which is, some people would say, it's a very expensive vacation, but for what it creates, the memories and the experience, they say it's pretty much priceless. And these people can talk about priceless because they have the financial means to do so.
So we can say that for sure the status symbol part still exists. We are not saying that. But the experiential part overcomes the other one. And actually there are two kind of owners There are the second-hand yacht owners and then the new builders. So actually, in both cases, the experience they expect, so the promise of the experience they will get on board, is the main driver for their purchasing behavior. In the first case, so when they purchase a second-hand yacht, because it's a ready-to-use yacht, so they don't have to wait for the moment. So it's pretty, it's faster as the process.
Instant gratification.
Exactly. What they do, sometimes they readapt the yacht to their own needs, because we are still talking about needs, crazy needs, but needs, because of the size of the family, because of the personal use they do. Some of them, they are living in the yacht, so they are readapting the yacht to their own daily needs once again. While for the other, for the new builders, actually, the experience sometimes is not really the experience they have on board, but is the experience they live while building the yacht.
We call them serial ones, because a moment one yacht is ready, they're already talking about the next project, have to start one. Their joy is in creating stuff. Once it's created and it's in the marina, as we often encountered, that we met the owner and they said, oh, you're brand new yacht. Yeah, I need another one now. You know, now that then when in the moment they see it, it's completed. The thrill is gone. Let's create something new.
Yeah. Yeah. That's certainly a familiar story. Yeah.
Yeah. We had one respondent where we even asked, she mentioned, oh, this is perfect. But we said, so why didn't you build them one after another? It's doing it. Because let's be quite honest, nothing can be more tailor-made than a super yacht build. I mean, people recall little things when they say, oh, when I walk in, I remember the moment when I looked at which kind of doorknob we're going to go for this one.
Yeah, I mean, apart from building a new house, really, I mean, there's not many other opportunities in your life where you are able to tailor something to the nth degree. And I mean, super yachts probably even further, because they are so custom, aren't they? You have an influence over every single design choice or technical choice on board that boat. It's completely your product, new build, custom, obviously.
Yeah.
So, and because the experiential part is so important, this is so the link with what Phil mentioned before. When they have to anyhow decide, when they anyhow decide to purchase a yacht, they know they will pass through different difficult moments when they are in contact with the service providers. So this is what they look aim to. So the experience, so independent from the fact that they have to speak with the brokers, with the shipyards, and then the marinas, and whatever it is. So the ultimate thing is what I will leave on board, but the problems remain.
Yeah, it's the challenge is, number one, it's not a one-stop solution. There are so many people you need, or also, how shall I say, put forward that you need them. You can also see a maturity into owners. Owners who are at the fourth and fifth super yacht, they say, I don't need to send my captain there a year before to look at this. This is my boat, not the captain's boat. I don't need a management company. I know how to run this. And when a marina or the builder says that's not possible, then I tell them how it is possible. You know, it seemed very much... there's the feeling of super yacht owners, in particular when they purchase for the first time, that they are taking on for a ride. People take advantage of them.
Yeah, that's certainly true. That can happen in this business. You just pray people are being well advised. But one line in your executive summary really fascinated me. It said, with the interaction with the service providers, you said, most of these interactions are not perceived as positive, and the testimonial about the yachting industry is less than flattering. So in your research, according to the 100 owners that you spoke to, the majority said their interactions with the industry were less than flattering.
Yeah, that's correct. Unfortunately, I remember when I presented it the first time in London, and I repeated, don't kill the messenger, don't kill the messenger. We are scientists. We tell you the truth. Our master is the truth. And we had to pretty much the audience was split in 50%. 50% said, no, that's not true. That's different. Our clients love us. And the other 50% came afterwards to us at dinner and say, you got it absolutely right. We need to talk about this, how we can make it better.
Well, that's a real problem, isn't it? I mean, it's a massive problem for our industry. If the majority of the people in your sample are saying the industry is not fun, or, you know.
Not even professional, you know. There were statements, a client mentioned in terms of brokerage, you know. I don't want to generalize. I just pick a quote here, but they say, they are like failed real estate agents, you know. That's not very flattering, to say the least. Or people saying, I believe every interaction I have, somebody takes advantage of me because I don't have the knowledge and I don't have the time. And
or when they are talking, when they harbor, they are asking to their crew to go outside not with their uniforms, because as soon as they will use the uniforms, the suppliers will charge the double. So actually, there are many, many examples. Actually, we are not saying that all people are not good, are not professional. Absolutely, this is not what we are saying. But the idea is to identify the aspects that can be improved. This is why we are doing this research.
Be quite honest. Regular human behavior is that you share negative things more likely than you share positive things. That's normal. But when we look at it, it's clearly there is a perceived lack of professionalism and a perceived lack of knowing what these people want. This is something we heard in every single interview. They don't really know why I want the super yacht. And this is how I've been treated. They don't get my point. They don't know why I'm doing this. And to be quite honest, we see the people who go through it more than once, they become more savvy. So they select the right people. They almost have like their core people. They say, I have my captain, I have my crew, I have my lawyer, I have my management company, and they take care of it. But it took me 3-4 super yachts to get there, which is not good. And it's always was me to figure it out. There's people look for one-stop solution at the beginning. And every time you put in another hurdle that you're not familiar with, sometimes you get lucky. We heard people talking. There's one exception of the system where people talk very highly about and highly respected are the lawyers working there. So we never heard a bad thing about a lawyer. All the lawyers that are involved in contracting and so on, they feel like they really represent the clients, you know. And often it is that designers, interior designers, and lawyers are more trusted than builders, for example.
About the builders, for example, one sentence is the only thing they're able to say is no. It's not possible to do this, it's not possible to do that. Actually, we have the money. So what they don't have is the time. This is what they lack. So time is the most precious possession they have. So I don't have time, but I have the money. So if you listen to me, if you really understand what I want, in most of the cases, I'm paying for your R&D, because actually I want you to find a solution for my problem. So why you are not listening to what I want? And then actually I'm sponsoring your R&D development, because next time you will learn from what I wanted to do to something new.
Yeah. And did when your conversations with these the owners, when they were talking about the their interactions with the industry, did they offer any solutions, or can you propose any? Obviously, a general improvement in professionalism across the board. I mean, there's obviously some brilliant companies who do it brilliantly already, but that's perhaps not the truth across the entire industry. But did they suggest any ways that these interactions could be improved?
Well, we had with some conversations to find out what will be possible solutions. And based upon all the things we heard, we proposed some. We believe one way to do it is, of course, that there needs to be some kind of certification if you work in the industry. In particular, if you're in contact with the client-facing one. So there needs to be a better job to be done, education, certification. So you apply a certain level of professionalism and knowledge, not just about the yacht, but about how to connect with human beings, etc., etc. So there's lots of things to be done and to be learned. We are actually quite happy that most of the people we are talking with are quite happy about our students, because at IOM we have Annalisa is heading the Master in Luxury program, and there we have a yachting elective. And all the people who come through the elective and work here in Monaco for this company, they are very well regarded, because people say they come with a solid understanding not only of the industry, but how to treat clients and what experiences they are looking for.
And the third sort of the element is the knowledge of soft skills. Because actually, back to the point, the experience comes first. And actually, you don't have, when you deal with these clients, you need to build an a business, so you need to offer business engagement. So we're talking about empathy, we're talking about social intelligence, emotional intelligence. So you are not a dry,
robot.
Exactly. So this is what they look for, really. Soft skills are the ultimate, so soft skills are the new black, because this is what is really needed.
Yeah,
I've never heard that term before, soft skills. So that kind of encompasses that, like you did, emotional intelligence and that ability to read and adapt to someone's mood. And
even yesterday I was reading an article. There are more and more research about, so it's not coming out of our research, but more and more companies are trying to understand how new candidates can bring soft skills to the company more than hard skills. Hard skills can be taught. Soft skills, or you have it, or you can shape it.
Yeah.
But much more needed in this industry.
You can look up all technical data that you need about yachting, buy a book or read a prospectus or the law, whatever you need to do that. But to deal with people, in particular this kind of people, and to understand the needs that they have and the experience they are looking for, that's the challenge. And this is where the industry is clearly lacking. Also, when you talk to shipyards, I love that. We had a conversation with somebody from the shipyard. He said, what about the client experience? And he said, we build boats. I'm like, yes, you build boats. However, you build boats for somebody. If these people don't get the experience they're looking for, they're not going to come back. And so we also believe that the shipyards need to be more aware of the client-facing one. You have some who are far more advanced than others, who have people who are key account manager, for the lack of a better word. Because the challenge is also when you have sales and development and building separated. We had a beautiful conversation with a young lady in just now at the Monaco Yacht Show, and we talked about that. And she said, our sales department is the promise department. And once they promise, we then have to deliver. And this is where, and this is normally also when you speak to this ultra high net worth individuals, to say my expectations are completely mismanaged. This is one thing that pretty much every industry gets wrong. Because when we talk about luxury for these people, what do they do? What do they advertise when you read their pages? You know, it's about the best team on the world. Everything is tailor-made. So I normally go with my clients through an exercise. I says, just you managers write down, because the thing that they always say, we exceed expectations. You know, that's the rule. We exceed expectations. I say, you three guys sit down and write down just your expectations. Then they put the expectations on one slide. And I say, do you believe you even meet them? Not a chance. And how can you exceed them? And we only have three people here. What do you set yourself up for? Dissatisfaction, people being upset. And there's so much in terms of communication that goes wrong. Over-promising, under-delivering. Right hand is promising one thing, left hand is promising one thing. And this is where this, how shall I say, disjointed system comes in. I have a broker, I have a lawyer, I have a manager, I have a crew, I have a captain, I have this, I have my family, and everybody, no one speaks to each other. You know, and at the end of the day, my boat is not ready, it doesn't look the way I want it. What the hell is happening here?
So what impact does that have on the, obviously that has doesn't have a great impact on the ownership experience, but it's not stopping people buying boats, obviously. I mean, those treasured moments on board are treasured moments regardless of the negative, influences externally.
The one thing that's a little bit of concern to us, and apparently also to the industry, is that the people who bought before and went through the experience are now slightly shifting away from buying. There are people who are fading out, where the family intervenes and says, "Listen, this is not really worth it. We use it 4 to 6 weeks a year, and you are occupied with it, and therefore not spending time with the family the entire year. And every time you talk about our super yacht, it's always in terms of costing you a headache, time, energy, resources wasted." So even the people who love it, they have not, even the one who are, who went, grew up sailing and love the sea. The love of the sea, the Nautica, that's one of the themes that always comes. There needs to be a connection to the sea. It's not just posing. It's you want to be on the water. You want to enjoy it. But these people more and more say, "I believe I will charter in the future."
Well, let's just talk about charter for a second as well, because that was a part of your study, and it was interesting. Again, reading some of your findings about the emotional connection with owning versus chartering, and there's no discernible emotional connection when you're chartering a yacht. It's much more of a transactional relationship, whereas owning a yacht comes with all of that kind of emotion. So tell us a bit more about that.
Oh, we have a beautiful story
Sentence, yeah.
of one of our respondents there. He said, "You have to understand, owning a yacht is like being married. It's a long-term relationship, lots of fights, being together cannot be avoided, and everything that comes with it. However, chartering is you meet a beautiful Yukon woman. You go out with them, you have a great time, and the next morning you just go your separate ways. This is chartering."
I like that.
Actually, when we spoke with other billionaires who are not yacht owners, and then we asked, "But did you charter? Did you or are you considering?" And then if they chartered, they said, "I don't want to," even if they have the financial means, because it's, of course, this is the minimum, so we give it for granted. And then they said, "No, actually, I'm not willing to, because actually, because of the all headaches, this is what I want to avoid." So there is apparently the discrepancy with the fact that you have the money, but you don't want to enter into this industry because of the management issues they don't want to face. So I'm sure, or maybe, so this is maybe one hypothesis. So if these problems with these headaches will be solved, at least part of them, maybe the more people would like to join this industry. So this is
Possibly,
something, yeah.
maybe, but the challenge is, of course, when we look at in terms of demographics, the people who own super yachts or own multiple super yachts even at the same time are now at the stage where they're pretty much saying, "Even I will be chartering in the future." And the future generation say, "I cannot have the headache." So sometimes we have like father and son. And the father is like, "My son is not even interested in yachting. He doesn't want to have the headache. He sees how much time and resources I spend for a few weeks of vacation. He says, sell it, Dad. I don't want it. I don't need it. I like the sea, but if I want, I charter. 1 week, 2 weeks out there, where I want, no limitations, and the end of the story." And the dad is like, "Yeah, but it's not completely to where I want it." And the son said, "Well, there are enough out there that I like, so don't worry about it." So this new generation also, you can see almost the separation between old money and new money. People who work very hard for their money and have their entrepreneurship and came up to a certain status, they say, "Professor, I have children. They are, and spending time with them is the most valuable thing in my life, to spend time with my family. I cannot waste to run like a little company. They describe running a super yacht like running a little company. They say it's not worth it for the few days. Yeah.
So does that speak to a sort of kind of uberfication of the super yacht industry? You know, the new younger money perhaps tends to rent or charter instead of own. I mean, you know, there's that kind of, or even the sharing economy, that kind of, they're not prepared to commit to the long-term investment in you know, a product carrying a lot of capital around. So they'd rather rent or even share it if they can.
Exactly. I mean, one thing that we already looked at since 2017 is fractional ownership. But fractional ownership is like not fish, not meat. You know, people, when they charter, they have no problem. But if you own a yacht, not problem. But if you own only part of the yacht, it seems like even these partial owners have a hard time to selling it to their friends and family. You know, because people say, why are you not chartering? And is it yours or isn't it yours? You know, it's kind of in between. It doesn't have the best kind of, how shall I say, outside reputation. And the people in this case, for that kind of ownership, looking for outside reputation in a way.
Well, it's certainly, that's a part of the market that's certainly never really taken off in super yachting or yachting more generally. I mean, there's a few exceptions, but it's certainly not a mainstream part of the business by any stretch.
No. I was talking with a fractional owner last Friday, and actually they are trying now considering to sell it because the problems that is caused by the ownership, the fractional ownership, are more than, you know, having your own yacht or simply charter. They were, so he said, we were pretty satisfied because we bought the yacht to put it on charter and then to take just some time on it. But actually at the end, it's a kind of I wanna be mentality.
And also multiple owners, yeah. Again, this, they say headache with planning it, other things going around it. We don't know if it will take off. I mean,
it's there, but yeah, it's not.
It never takes off because it doesn't. For me, looking it from the outside and looking at other industry, it doesn't make sense. You know, for real estate, I might see it, but with yachting and everything that's connected with it, it's just too much effort. You know, having a house or a private island for 6 weeks and then having another 6 weeks, that's different. You know, but a boat with everything that comes with it, planning it, crew, challenging. Yeah. And you're on the water. People always forget you're on the water. You know, it's not easy to access it.
No.
We had a marvelous conversation during the Monaco Yacht Show because when we presented this, and people asked me, so what's the future, Professor? What's the future of yachting look like? And we said, okay, if we compare and contrast it with things that we see in other industries. Number one, clearly the trend will go to charter. People will not own anymore. But traditionally, an owner then charters it out. So who will be the owner? And we believe the owners will come out of different industries. Because more and more industries awake to the notion that super yachts is not about boats, it's vacation. This is where we're competing at. So the people who are normally in tourism and hospitality and have the money, they will go out and buy yachts. And they will not buy little yachts, they will buy super yachts, where you then have your apartments in them and you can get it out. So you need people who have the financial means. Because ideally for somebody who builds super yachts, the best thing to do is build a yacht which is flexible in terms of presenting it to clients and rent it out to potential clients or have potential clients using it, and the rest of the time you're chartering it. You know, what better business card is there than your individual one that you can individualize, and it can be individualized. But bringing a boat to the Monaco Yacht Show and hope that one of the 50 people walking on board will say, oh yeah, I like this style, I can envision myself. What are the chances? Most people, because it's so individual, as I said before, it's the most custom-made thing. So if you go somewhere that's not custom made to your taste, you're the famous envision if it would be different. And you're like, really? Yeah. So we believe companies out of hospitality and tourism will come in. We believe more and more companies, large companies, who see it as a tool to cater to clients, change prospects into clients, they will go for that, you know, because they also have the financial means, let's say General Electric or the big companies or banks of the world do that. That will make sense, you know, or somebody's coming up from outside and taking it over. But the traditional model, we don't see flying in the near future.
It's not okay, that's fascinating. I mean, there already are some movements into the sector by companies that, like you describe, building kind of, you know, super high-end, very big yachts that you have a cabin in, effectively, that travel that year.
And there's another little niche player that comes in, that we believe will come in, is the people who run the cruise ships.
With it, yeah,
because they have the financial means.
They're eyeing the sector, certainly. But that's all really interesting. Kind of a trend towards chartership and a kind of movement away from ownership. But how do you reconcile that with the, you know, runaway performance of the market this year? I mean, is it just a kind of a black swan, impossible to predict and judge event? I mean, I don't know, because the market this year has gone crazy. It's going to break every record there is. And we have many, many more owners. And what I'm hearing from brokers and what some of the owners I'm meeting that are coming into the market, these are former charterers, a lot of them, who are now moving into ownership, or they're new to the sector entirely.
Let's put it in this way. Allora, first of all, there is the coincidence with the COVID period, with the pandemic, that the super high request of security, safety, and then private concepts, first of all. Maybe it was a big opportunity for the business to showcase the importance of these aspects, so maybe they can go ahead. So absolutely. So we noticed that in the past 2 years, so the numbers wrap up. So maybe it's a trend that will stay. We are still affected by the pandemic, so we need to see what the trend will be in the next 2 years, not just the first one. So I would wait for 2 years to see. What we mean is that actually this shifting from ownership to being, so more related to the customer experience, is in the market since few years now. So what we expect is that the new generations will approach the business from a different perspective. So this is the thing. So who is at a certain level, so the old money or a certain age, is of course is very fascinating. I would be very interested in understanding the years. So what is the age of the new owners? Because actually I don't know if somebody did this analysis, because the thing is, what we are saying is that the new generations will shift more towards a full experience than ownership. This is what we say.
Yeah. See, Stuart, we are scientists. So as scientists, we see things in a longitudinal way. Mm-hmm. The industry looks from quarter to quarter, and we say there's a trend that's coming. Even if the trend is now counteracted for 2 years, we believe this is not going to mm-hmm. change. You know, we don't believe that the reasons why people do not like ownership and perceive it in this way will change. We don't see it changing. And you said it correctly. The people who come in are the ones that charter and now go to owner. So most of them are first owners. So when they are in 2-3 years of their ownership, they might think differently about it. So we can see, and also to be quite honest, let's see, I always say, where were you before? Then you dropped down for 2-3 years. And now are you really that much higher? Coming from low, it looks higher. But coming from before, it's probably not that much. You know, because everybody say, oh, it's booming now. I said, well, if you start from nothing, pretty much, then of course it looks like a boom. But let's look at it longitudinal. Is it really a boom?
Sometimes long-term thinking is not, we're not great at that generally as an industry. But we could certainly be better at that.
Commuting the knowledge from another research we have done, talking about fine spirits, actually, of course, the price is completely different. The price point is completely different. But the most important finding we have found is that customers, what they really look for is not the product per se, but it's the customer experience they have with the service providers. So, and then we notice that even in the private jet flyers. So once again, if this major problem will be solved, the trends can change. But the reality at today is that this is what they want. They have the money. They can spend whatever they want.
And what you mentioned, Stuart, is absolutely right. You think as an industry. You know, industries have a tendency to only look at themselves and their competition. I'm the better broker than this guy. I build better boats. I do this better. But that's an ultra high net worth individual. Is not just a super yacht owner. He looks at everything. He has tailor-made service, wealth management. He uses this. He has this. He has his private jet. So he can compare the experience he gets with other things that are regular to him to the super yacht industry. And he said, you guys are not there yet. So looking at each other and saying, no, I'm a little bit better than you. The customer says, so what? You know, I don't care if you're better X than Y. But in comparison, you're not there. It's like when people tell me in the luxury industry, our e-commerce is better than my competitor. I said, yes, but if you ask the customer, they say, you need to be as good as Amazon, because this is my comparison for online shopping, not you versus them. And they say, yeah, but that's not our industry. I'm like, yes, but it's the customer that cares. And customers are not little boxes. You know, I'm not a super yacht customer. I'm an ultra high net worth individual who can compare and contrast all of them. And in comparison, you guys are not there. I'm sorry, you know. And why should I spend that much money when everywhere else where I spend that money, the service is so much better and the experience? Why bother? You know, I can have other tools.
The quality is there.
Other toys.
So all of them are confirming that actually I may be more interested in a yacht coming from the Netherlands instead of the Germany, from Italy. This is a personal flavor. But so the quality is out there.
Yeah,
but the rest counts
you're,
more.
You're
makes
preaching
the
to the converted really much. But because people in the industry say, we know, it sounds insane that we even buy one after we went through that again. And I don't even know why I was doing it, but it's just so great. You know, so but these people who believe it's so great, even they fade away. We heard somebody who had like 12 boats, 13 boats.
Yeah. I cannot make it anymore.
I cannot make it anymore. We will charter now in the future. My wife convinced me. You know?
Even for that person, the emotional connection with ownership, what wasn't sufficient to keep them in ownership effectively. Okay.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, when they think about, yes, but is it worth it? And more people think it might not be worth it. And that's the challenge, of course. The super yacht industry loves to sell new boats to owners and so on. And I hope, but ownership, owning it when you use it, this is where the pain starts before, but really owning is when you then put the proof to the pudding. So let's wait for this owners. I say what they say in 3-4 years. I mean, they purchased now, so they're going to get their yacht, what, in 3, 4, 5 years, whenever. And then let them have a few years and then talk. What they say then, there might be the proof is in the pudding.
Actually, there is another word that we didn't mention up until now. There is the sense of trust that comes with. So it's not just about the great experience, but also the sense of trust. If I trust you, so the bond, the eternal bond is there. So what is the joke with the one eye, two eyes, or the king of...
Yeah, I always say, when people say, yeah, but we are better than our competition. I say, yeah, in the valley of the blind, the one eye is the king. You don't need perfect 20/20 vision. But I already said, look, if somebody comes in like the people we just mentioned, and do it better.
It's done.
It's done. You know, and then people would say, like the Ubers of the world, where did that come from? You know, it's like, well, have you ever stood in line and waiting for a taxi at JFK? This is where it came from. You know, and I'm sure that, I mean, I would love to see some young entrepreneurs who have the financial means just come and shake up the industry and say, we do it differently. This is the way we're going to do it. And they will come and everybody will say, oh, how did that happen? And I said, well, we said it like 7 years ago, but hey, who trusts an academic? You know, we are just sitting in our ivory towers and talking amongst ourselves.
Well, we're for the people listening to this thinking, wow, that's, you know, it's a fascinating insight, and, you know, they don't want to be disrupted out of a job and perhaps they want to affect some change themselves. I mean, where can they find your research?
The research, that's always a tough one. You know what I would suggest, if that's okay with you guys, you know. And,
of course.
We will make an executive summary of them. And even the front page of it, and you can distribute it to your readers or the listeners who are interested in.
Okay.
And otherwise, they can contact us. You know, there's only one Professor Dr. Phil Klaus on LinkedIn, as far as I know. And there's only one Dr. Ressa Tarquini Poli on LinkedIn. So just click on them.
The tricky thing is that actually we have to publish the academic findings first. So this is why we cannot reveal and then distribute the results.
So we have some more nuggets, but we have to be patient. You know?
The final paper, effectively, the findings. When will they be published?
There's already an executive summary available for it, and two other papers about the ultra high net worth individuals, which pretty much goes according to the super yacht owners too, are already out there. You know, it's just, it's an academic publication, and I don't think most people will have access to an academic or a library connected to a university. So if we send it to you, you can freely disseminate it or contact us directly. Because we would love to talk to you people, because it's always, we are scientific, we are so passionate about this stuff. We're like, let's do something about it. Let's make it better. There's a great, I always say, when I listen to, or when I speak to executives or our yachting elective class, they're like, should I really go in this business? I said, yes, look at the great opportunities you have there. I mean, how easy it is to make a change. And look, these people, despite all of that, they are willing to invest. You just have to make it better. This is your job. And I said, oh, yeah, that's a good outlook. I said, yeah, it's not all gloom. You know, it's great. You know, if things are wrong, challenges are opportunities. You know, and look, it's in a way a very immature, can I say that? Immature, young is probably better.
Yeah.
Young industry, you know. So it's room for all these things. And I believe
it's barely two generations old, this industry. So, you know.
It's normal. You know, it's growing pains. Sometimes most of the successes might be incidental, you know, to be quite honest. But now it's time that you're more in the spotlight, you're becoming more mature. You have to mature with it and mature according to what your clients' needs are.
May I say something unpopular?
Ooh. Of course.
There is a very, so what has to be improved are the managerial skills of people working in this industry. Overall, that's it. So to come to a conclusion. So there is a huge will. Of course, it's a fascinating industry. Everybody loves it. Or because you dream of it, or because you are part of it.
Yeah.
But you know, what we are highly suggesting is that every single company invests in managerial skills for the people, especially the ones who are in contact with these clients who are becoming more refined and refined every single year. These actually, one of the two papers we will send you is about how these consumers are international, are global. Actually, what we usually do, so we deal with a Russian because it's Russian, then we behave in this way. Then if I deal with an American, I do in this way because Americans behave in this way. Actually, our research findings are showing that these people are international people. They have six or seven different
roots, actually. They come, her mother is Russian, their father is from Italy, and whatever it is. They were born in one country, they were studying in the United States, and they moved to Azerbaijan to do something else. Actually, they are people of the world.
Companies always have this notion that you can split ultra-high net worth individuals into demographics, where they come from, where they're born, where they're raised, educated. Doesn't work. They all look for the same things, and that's great, you know? It's homogeneous. They all look for the same things. It doesn't matter where they live, where they come from, how old they are. They all look for the same kind of experiences. How easy is that? Just deliver them and don't mismanage their expectations.
This is why the managerial skills must be shaped.
Yeah.
Soft skills and then more managerial skills. And when we think with managerial skills, of course, soft skills are absolutely part of it. When we talk about leadership, customer experience management, empathy, emotional intelligence, this is what is needed in the industry.
Well, amen.
Amen.
We're too passionate about this topic. I'm very sorry, Stuart.
No, it's absolutely brilliant. I love your passion, and I'll certainly be encouraging as many people in the industry to listen to this conversation as possible. I think it's you know, it's probably something that we all need to hear and heed. So Professor Klaus, Dr. Tarquini Poli, thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate it. Hopefully we'll get a chance to speak again soon.
With pleasure. We wait for you, Stuart.
Thanks for listening to this week's Boat Briefing, which was mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.